This is the Chicks of FinTwit, a finance podcast by women for everyone. I am your host, Caitlin Cook. Join me as I highlight female trailblazers and their male allies across the industry as each shares their expertise on a variety of finance topics. Nothing is off limits. Thanks for joining us. Now, please enjoy this episode.
All opinions expressed by Caitlin Cook and the Chicks of FinTwit podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of the host or any of their affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only, is not investment advice, and should not be relied upon for any investment decisions. We are not recommending any securities, nor is this an offer or sale of a security.
Hello, and welcome to the Chicks of FinTwit podcast, a finance podcast by women for everyone. I'm your host, Caitlin Cook, otherwise known as Dead Kate Bounce on Twitter. And today we have a special guest, the girl who can turn your professor's 60-minute lecture into a 60-second TikTok, a new investor learning publicly, the Robin Hood kid, Kayla Kilbride. Kayla, welcome to the podcast.
I actually haven't heard Robin Hood kid in a little while, so that's fun. I love that.
Had to bring that back for the people. What a throwback. But for those who aren't maybe as deeply entrenched in TikTok and financial Twitter, maybe just a quick background on who you are. I'd love to dig into, you know, a little bit of your origin story after that, if you will, but we can start with sort of a brief intro.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Kayla. I originally started on social media under Robin Hood Kid, which is why Kate referred to that. Specifically on TikTok, I've amassed around 170,000 followers or so. Under that name, it's recently changed a little bit. I moved over to Twitter around the beginning as well. But yeah, just been in the financial space since technically November of 2020, but really not publicly until the end of December. I started trading back in January. So very new to the space, and, you know, started the journey from hands down a place of just feeling absolutely out of the loop when it comes to my own personal finances. So it's been a fun journey over the past couple 9 months.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's been fun to watch your, you know, your presence on Twitter grow. I don't use TikTok, but I have gone to TikTok a couple times just for you, just on some of the things that you put up. But most of it gets transferred over to Twitter, which is very convenient for me to have it in one space. But yeah. I do go to TikTok occasionally. I don't make them. We can collaborate on one. Maybe I'd consider it. But
oh my gosh, yes.
That would be the only way to get me on there, to be honest. But I am curious to sort of dig into the origin story on getting into finance, teaching people about the basics of investing, because, you know, and we feel the same way about this, is financial education, financial literacy is so, so important to me. I think that we really need to open up these conversations. And I think it's beneficial to have a fresh perspective from people. You know, finance is so gatekept traditionally. There's a lot of jargon and it seems really intimidating, but at the end of the day, finances really control everything in this world and no one is exempt from that. And I think we could do a lot more to help the general population, which you've done through TikTok. And I'd love to hear how you got started on that and, you know, what caught people's attention? What was your first big hit and how did you get started on sharing that on social media?
Totally. So I guess going back to probably my first two semi-viral videos on TikTok, it was breaking down the basics of what is being bullish and what is being bearish. And two of the most basic terms that everyone in the finance realm should learn. But going back to what you said about all of the jargon and the language, it's honestly stepping into the financial space is learning a completely new language. And you have to be open to that. Some people think it's just learning how to manage numbers and money. But at the end of the day, to have these conversations with anyone who's educated in the space, you have to learn a completely new language. I've been in spaces to this day. I was in a call earlier today where they were throwing around terms and I was like, awesome. Sure. Do you mind like I'm a 5-year-old, could you say that again, please? And I now feel like I've had these conversations and I am having these conversations now every single day for the most part. And I still feel like there's so much to learn, which is the beauty of finance, but also one of the greatest inhibitors for people entering the space. So specifically on TikTok, my dad is also, I guess you could call him a finance content creator. And a while back, he's like, you should just jump on social media. He has probably 130 to 150,000 subscribers on YouTube talking about the stock market. And he's like, just jump on, you know, TikTok, but you have to know what you're talking about. And I was like, no, this is the best part. I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm going to be honest about that. So that's where the learning publicly comes from. And I feel like a lot of people for sure resonated with that. Just the general idea that there are people starting from ground zero. And initially I went in with like, here's how I'm going to turn, you know, $500 into 5,000 maybe, or I'll lose it all. Who knows? But then getting into it, I was like, actually, I don't know if it's as much about making a lot of money really fast or over a certain period of time, and more so just being open to the conversation and learning something new to develop a new skill set that will benefit me in the long term rather than just in the short term of turning a little bit into a lot, which has been the story over the past, you know, couple of months with meme trading and just what's going on in the stock market right now, which is a whole new world that's been dove into. But yeah, I think for the most part, it comes back to just being willing to take a little bit of time to educate myself and learn alongside of other people publicly.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for that. And we can definitely get more into the public aspect of that. But I think the most important thing you said there is time. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, I feel like, in the general population around finance, right? You see all of these sort of get rich quick deals, and those who don't have as much insight to that, that's obviously very flashy and attractive. But like you said, it's less about the short-term gratification and potential for, you know, that get that quick buck. And it's more about the long term. And, you know, then you have to separate out investing versus trading and the different types of goals that you set for yourself. And there's a lot to unpack there. But like you said, I mean, you can't skip over the basics. You have to start there and you have to be comfortable. And, you know, I think that by your putting it out on social media, you make it much more accessible. That's why I'm, you know, there's a lot of downsides as well, but I'm a huge, huge fan of the idea of just using social media as an educational tool and putting that information out there for free.
Totally. And I mean, the video format that's quick and digestible, people are like, are you going to go over to YouTube? And I'm like, there are so many people who can do this long form. There are. And there's few people who can just be like 60 seconds. Here's the basics of what you need to know. It's not that intimidating. But yeah, I know I totally agree with what you're saying. And even going back to what you were saying about differentiating between trading and investing. I had a conversation with someone the other day and I was like, you're using the same vehicles. I don't care how you use it. Just learn them. And they were like, you have to distinguish the difference between trading and investing. They are not the same. And I was like, I'm not saying they're the same. I'm just saying for someone who's trying to get into the space to like, be like, oh, these are two very different things. And all they see is the exact same vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yes, technique is different. But if someone gets into a car, you can develop into a I mean, you can't actually develop probably into like a speed car racer or whatever, but like you're using the same vehicle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eliminating people from the conversation, even in something like that, where it's like, well, you have to know the difference between the two. I'm like, oh, those are the conversations where I'm like, I understand as a finance person what you're saying, but as a new investor, trader, whatever it is, like, can I use both terms?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you made a good point too. Like it's a progression. Like you need to learn the basics of all of these things. And that's not like the trading versus investing thing isn't even the first thing that you get to, right? There's so much to unpack before that. What's the stock market? How do I invest money? Like there's a lot that I think, and especially for like, I come from like a finance background too. And I definitely have taken that for granted. And the more that I think about it, right? Like what's simple to someone that's been in this space isn't necessarily simple to everyone. And there's so much to unpack. And I would say that, especially with like TikToks, there so many people underestimate how difficult it is to take these long form pieces of information that are so complex and to boil it down. So maybe before we get into more of like that learning publicly, I guess I'd ask, how do you do it? What's the process like look like?
It is so painful, Kate. I mean, you have so, for example, I just did a video on puts and I understand the Greeks. I understand expirations and strikes and everything that goes into buying or selling an option. And then to be like, okay, how do I dumb this down into 60 seconds? Here's the problem. The first problem is whatever I do will leave out a certain part of something. Another aspect is there's probably something about it that I don't understand well enough to touch on in detail, especially in 60 seconds. So I'll spend, like, this is from point A to point B. I have a concept, for example, a put option. Now I have to choose, am I buying a put or am I selling a put? Because those are two very different situations. Mm-hmm. And I'll select one of those. So I was like, okay, let's just say I'm a beginner. I want to know what it means to buy a put. And I'm like, what real life example is similar enough to at least get the concept through to someone? But also requires them to ask a few more questions. So, like, for example, in the situation that I did in the TikTok on buying a put, I compared it to basically asking Amazon seller support to put some AirPods on hold before Black Friday so that you can sell them at $99. But when Black Friday hits, they're only valued at $49. So you buy them all up at $49 and then use your contract to sell it at $99. Now, does Amazon seller support happen where you can put AirPods on hold for 2 months? No, that doesn't exist. So do I have a handful of people in the comments who are like, what's the Amazon seller support phone number? How do I do this? And I'm like, shoot, I've gone too far. But like, it's not necessarily saying this is a perfect example, but this is something that's saying, at least I'm going to get you close enough to the concept to understand it a little bit differently so that maybe when it's explained to you in its actual definition terms, which is the right, but not the obligation to sell a specific asset by a specific date at a specific price. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense by definition to someone who doesn't even own a stock or mm-hmm. know what an option is. So just kind of putting those into real life examples, that takes a couple hours. Just the thinking of like, shoot, what could this possibly be? Stretching it a little bit, but not too much. And then the worst part, which is as soon as it's posted, and also maybe it's my favorite part. I don't know. It depends on how I'm feeling that day, is that the trolls immediately hit the comments and are like, you left out every important detail. And every time I just respond, I'm like, all right, dude, you do it in 60 seconds and get back to me. Like, end of story. Here's as close as we're going to get. And the response from anyone but the trolls for the most part is either A, that was so helpful, I've never had someone explain it like this, thank you so much. Or B, I still don't get it, do you have another example? And both of those responses, I'm more than happy to go deeper into depth. And for those that, like in the most recent video where it was like, can you explain how I get them at 49 or whatever it might be, then, you know, you have conversations with people. And that's the beauty of the internet, is having those conversations after the initial content is put out. So it's a long process. It's more than, you know, just record, film, edit, which is part of it. Another part that's difficult, but.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into that. And this is a good segue into what I wanted to talk about most, honestly, is just learning publicly. Finance is full of, you know, the personality types that you get, especially on social media. It's very much a people waiting to tell you why you're wrong. And they're going to tell you why you're wrong. And they're going to show everyone else why they're so smart. And that happens a lot. It's a big part of, you know, putting yourself out there, building an audience. And it's, you know, sometimes social media tries, it feels like you're not even actually talking to people, like dehumanizes the entire process sometimes. Yeah. And people, you know, these keyboard warriors, I think that, you know, we could probably both agree from experience that sometimes, or a lot of the time, you know, being a woman, especially being a younger woman, I think is also another factor that kind of plays in. But I just applaud you, and I've told you this so many times, for being willing to put yourself out there to learn publicly. And I think that what you're doing is a huge net positive. I just know that takes so much day in and day out to be getting that negative feedback. And it always, you know, people say to ignore it, and it's easier said than done on that front. Sure. So what's your experience been like learning publicly? Like, I'm sure there's been some struggles, but I know that you're obviously very passionate about what you're doing, and that won't stop you.
Totally. I think there's a couple different people in this equation. So for example, there's the person that doesn't know much, and then there's the person that knows a lot, right? And obviously there's the spectrum on that as well. And I think that most people aren't willing to say, I don't understand that. Will you explain that a little differently to me? And there's, I mean, you get in any classroom setting, whether you're in high school, college, whatever it is, nobody wants to be the person to raise their hand, say, can you go over that again? Right. To the professor. So I sit in these Twitter spaces, or I read the comments on TikTok videos or Instagram videos, and people like their knowledge. End of story. People like their story being told in general. People like to communicate things that they feel confident about, right? And so if someone really loves their knowledge and they have a lot of knowledge, then when I bring something to the table that they see a potential flaw in, most people are very quick to just be like, to respond and say, well, okay, yeah. But on top of that, here's my knowledge and why I have X, Y, Z. It makes them look good, especially in a competitive space like social media. Social media, everyone's looking for the follow. Maybe that's exaggerating to say everyone's looking for a follow, but a lot of people want to be perceived a certain way on social media. So if you have knowledge, you'll be perceived in a way that typically gains influence. And that's what people are looking for. So it's a competitive space to be in. And I think there aren't enough people who are in this space that are willing to say, actually, I'm not the one who has all the knowledge, but I am the one who's willing to receive it. So mm-hmm. I sit in these Twitter spaces and often, you know, sometimes I'll say things that I feel confident about or if I have an opinion on, I'll say it. And sometimes I get retaliation where it's like, actually, that's not correct. And my response every single time is, can you elaborate on that? You know, and if someone can elaborate on why, whether that's actually in the TikTok comments as well, where it's like, actually, you know, this is totally wrong. And that's where I'll say, do you mind explaining where this is wrong? And often, more often than not, they don't respond. And it's because all they wanted to do was troll and make themselves feel like they had a little bit more knowledge. Now, the people that I engage with and the people where it's a safe space to learn publicly are the people that then reach out, whether it be on that space in my DMs, on a comment that say, this is where I think you could improve on this, or like, here's some resources that might challenge your thinking. And it becomes a conversation rather than this dominating them trying to have the final word sort of thing. And then there's the people where I openly, you know, they don't know a whole lot. I might know a little bit more than they do. And we just have conversations about where to start. And those are always fun. But I think those are on the spectrum, the people that are always more aggressive are the people that think they have more knowledge. And the ones in the middle that are often willing to say, like, actually, I have a resource that might challenge that way of thinking. Those are the most powerful conversations, because it's not about being right or having more knowledge. It's simply about sharing information, which is so much better to me than trying to beat someone over the head with better information.
No doubt. And I think so much of it's in delivery and the intent behind it, right? Because like you said, there are plenty of people who know a lot more. There's always going to be someone that's, you know, like better, smarter, knows more on something. Yeah. And that's fine. It's, will they use that knowledge that they have to help other people, or do they want to use it to gatekeep or to bring people down? And I think that we can agree there's one of those things that benefits society, and there's one that just does the complete opposite. And it's, I mean, I agree with you. I think that that's the best part of social media, is when you can feel comfortable enough to say, hey, I don't understand this. Does anyone have resources? And people actually help. Like, large majority of, I don't know if I'd say majority, I guess, but depending on your circle, a lot of people are willing to help. And it's more of a, not I am telling you so, it's a, I want to help you grow. I want to invest in you. I want to see you succeed. And I, people who see a net positive and helping others. So I know it's definitely both sides of the coin, but you're doing really good things. And I think that being so open to receiving all of that feedback, especially early on, I mean, I'm still early on too, right? Like, working in the industry, learning about the space is one of the best things that you can do.
Totally. And it's so fun to learn too, when you have people who are willing to give their time to help you. I can't even express how grateful I am. Not everyone's in a position of influence, I guess, to where people want to help too. And I have to acknowledge that, like, I've received the amount of help that I've received because I've put myself out there, gained a bit of a following, and have people now that see me as someone who they want to pour into. So now the challenge is, not everyone wants to take the time to teach someone who doesn't seem like they're, who's not an influencer, I guess is what I would say. And I don't, I'm trying not to use that term loosely because I don't consider myself an influencer. I just create, like, I consider myself a creator, but in the sense that I have amassed a decent following in 8 months or so, more people are more willing to teach someone like myself who has a little bit of influence, who seems potentially like, I don't know. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually goes into kind of the next topic I wanted to talk about, because you do, you know, people would probably associate you a lot with TikTok and with Twitter. And I really do want to highlight from when we met a couple of weeks ago, just the work that you do outside of that, because I think it's incredible. Yeah. And I think that we need more of that. When you talk about, you know, people being more willing to pour into someone that has that presence, that has that platform, because they feel more incentivized to do so and like to keep propelling you upward. There's such a large group that's left to the side and neglected. Yeah. And I think that you've done some really good work on that, that I don't want to speak for you on that, but maybe we can start there on some of the work you do outside of social media.
Totally. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's really easy to communicate with people who have influence, but then, you know, I work with high school students actually at my church. And they all, for the most part, it's a church in an area of LA that they come from lower income families. And so I recently dipped off of the face of social media for a week. I think at the time Matt had thought I was like murdered or something.
Our friends were very worried. When you leave Twitter for a week,
you know, it's like, she didn't say anything. Where did she go? It's been 4 days. It's been 5 days. Where is Kayla? Which was nice. I'm glad that people reached out, but I was, up in the mountains with these high school students at a summer camp, and hearing their stories and getting to know them even more. I realized there was a significant disconnect between the content that I was putting out and the real life engagement that I had with people in my close circle. So these are students that I've been walking with for since December. So around the same time that I've been on social media. And I was so disconnected from their actual stories, to the point where I realized if they were to go onto my social media page, would they have actually benefited from it? To an extent, I think they would have learned something, hands down, yes. But so many people are in the space of trying to help in the financial literacy and the educating on how to steward your finances, what to do with your finances, how to retire if you put $400 away a month. But very few, I would argue almost none, no creators are reaching out to the people who cannot get themselves out of debt and don't have the $400 to set aside. And they say often, how do I make enough money to set 400? Like, they're willing. They're people who are willing to set that money aside, understand how to invest, but have no idea how to even get to the place where they can be making enough money. And that is one area that I just see lacking, of everyone thinks they have a solution. And then you get to the people that are really struggling and it's like, ooh, yeah, I don't know. Or even you have like a 50-year-old who has never set a penny aside. And very few people are like, ooh, yeah, I've got answers for you. Like, it's just harder unless you're the ideal human or the ideal use case.
Right.
So some things that I've been doing basically over the past couple of weeks since coming back from the mountains with these students is I'm like, I'm acknowledging that I have some level of privilege, end of story, no questions asked. How do I utilize that to enable some sort of, not equality, but equity, where they're standing, you know, at a point that's five paces back, I'm five paces forward. How do I get us to have a conversation where I can either bring them forward, basically help them somehow? I'm not saying that I'm the solution. I'm just saying, what conversations am I having with these students? Part of that has been through an NFT project where I'm like, I know some of these kids' parents can't pay rent. That's it. I know these kids, almost all of these kids can't even afford the college application fee to apply. As seniors in high school, they'll never apply for college because they can't afford the college application fee. So I'm like, I don't know. I can't fix society. I wish I could fix society to make it easier for them. And that's my background, is in sociology, studying human behavior and systems. And I spent 4 years trying to figure out why the heck homelessness is so rampant in the US, and especially in cities. And I'm like, people have spent so much time trying to solve these issues, and there's been so little progress, I would argue, or sad progress. Like, poverty is just one of the most, and now I'm rambling a little bit, but the poverty system, it's not a system, but the cycle of poverty in the US even is just so sad. And so I'm like, I can't solve it, but what can I do at least for the people that I'm physically present with? Even though I have a following on social media, I'm so disconnected from the people that I'm physically present with. So part of the NFT thing that I was doing was all of those proceeds will just go directly back to them. My needs are being met. I don't need it. That's, you know, that's it. So how do I use this to help them develop plans for their future and utilize like a little bit, something that might bring them at least a pace forward, to help them in their, you know, financial futures, even though I don't have nearly even close to any of all of the answers that I wish, as I ramble in my brain, that I desperately wish that I had.
No, and it's not even rambling, right? Like, this is important stuff. And I think we need to talk about these things more, is that like, even when you're putting out educational content, that there's still going to be that group that doesn't have access to that. They're just underserved, unbanked populations that have just been entirely left out of the equation. Even when you think that you're, you know, appealing to the masses, putting it out there for free on social. Well, social media, even in itself, isn't free. Not in in the truest form, right? Like, not everyone has the access to that. Some people don't have running water or a place to sleep. You think they have internet and a phone to access these things? So I do think a lot of this just requires some added perspective and like realizing, like you said, I mean, some of us, like, we have privilege, right? And even when it may be things that we tend to overlook, I mean, that's still a lot better than most people will ever have it. And if we can give back in any way that can help them at all, I think that's so, so important. So I love everything you're doing. I love the fact that you've used your platform to help, you know, as many people as possible. You can't solve the world's problems on your own, but you can start, right? Like, we need to put, if we had more people thinking the way that you do, helping people more, like taking the time to educate, because that's empowering. People don't even know what's possible until you educate them on the possibilities and what's out there. So, not to ramble myself now, but
I think it's
key though. And especially with, you know, when it comes to talking about finance and like you said, I mean, it's a really good point, is a lot of the time we talk about like the basics of investing. Well, tell people how to make money first, to find a job. Like, these are just like very practical, you know, things to do. People can't even pay rent. It's not like they're going to go open up an investment account on Schwab to do anything, right? Like, there are steps that are skipped. And I guess my question for you would be, like, throughout this, obviously there's not a one size fits all depending on the situation, but where do you start working with people like that to get them up to speed a little bit?
Open their eyes to the amount of opportunities that are actually out there. The cycle of poverty is the understanding that they, you know, they do what they see. We're creatures of habit. We're just naturally, the behaviors that we adopt are the behaviors typically of our parents or however we were raised. So if you were raised in poverty, you're raised to think that that's kind of all that there is. I've had friends who become, who have amassed a decent amount of wealth and still have a mentality of poverty. Mm-hmm. So the starting point is, hey, did you know that there's actually opportunity out there? So I think things on TikTok where it's like, for example, I hate this, but I also have to appreciate it, is, you know, you can put $10,000 on a home and rent it out and do this and make $300,000 a year, right? This is just a random example that math is not going to add up, but you're like, okay, awesome. But where do I get the $10,000 to start? You know, but it's that content where someone that I communicate with, like these students, where they are like, wait a second. So how do I get $10,000? Because I want to be able to get to that point. So that kind of initial, something to spark it at least a little bit, where they're like, I mean, 10,000 seems really out of my reach, but now I have a goal. So how do I reach it? So we start with that little spark. And then we go through to, hey, weird opportunity. There's an NFT craze going on right now. Do I understand it? Nope. Not really. Are we going to go for it? Yep. Yep, we are. Why? Because there's no reason not to. So, I mean, they're coming over to my house tonight and we're going to draw potatoes all night long. They're going to design their potatoes. We'll release a project come early October, and they'll be done by them. And will it do well? I have no idea, but it's like starting those conversations of, if you can at least get your mind to start thinking that there is more opportunity out there than what you were socialized to believe growing up, this cycle, this mentality of poverty, you can emerge from that by seeking new opportunities, even if you don't know where they are, just by trying things. So we're going to try it. We'll draw potatoes. We will apply for jobs. We will create financial goals and plans over the next year together, hearing their ideas, hearing what their needs are. They might say, Kayla, I would really like to, you know, we raised 5 ETH for about 6 girls. And that's a lot of, that's like life-changing money for them. And some of them might say, I'd like to pull this out to help my mom pay rent. And I'm not going to be the one to say, actually, I think you should invest. You know, my job is not to tell them what to do with their money, but it's to help them at least establish the steps to say, you can absolutely do that. Here are some options, and at least giving them what might be some possible opportunities for them to grow their money. But at the end of the day, if they have needs, they have needs. And, you know, if they need to meet those, that's, you know, that's what they do with the money. And so trusting their process, their journey, letting them set goals, letting them find opportunities, and just being kind of a champion of their dreams and their goals is what I'll do, you know, for the next year or so. But I think that's the conversation with anyone, you know, not assuming that I know what their story is, but letting them tell it to me.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more on all of that. I think it's just really important working with, you know, anyone underprivileged, underserved, anyone who really is struggling, honestly, like a lot of the time, they just need to know that someone is there to support them. Someone cares about them. It doesn't, you don't have to have the answers, right? I think it's just, you know, being that positive presence in their life and, you know, help being there to help them make those tough choices, or even just being there while they make those choices themselves, right? I mean, you just need to, just a support system. And I think we overlook that a lot when we come from background, not to assume everyone's background, but I mean, you mentioned, right? Like if there's kind of that sense of privilege, it's like, we take that for granted. I take that for granted every day, having this go-to support system. I have issues. I have people that I can ask about it. I have struggles. I know who to go to for what, and I have multiple people to choose from. There's so much optionality that like a lot of people aren't fortunate enough to have. So I think that's a really good point. And I also would love to talk more about the potato thing to give context to those who don't know your NFT plan. If you want to talk about that a little bit as well, because that sounds a little strange out of context.
Oh my gosh. That sounds so strange out of context. And I'll talk about the potatoes. I just wanted to go back on one thing too, is, the access to, just the individuals, going back to like who's physically around me. So many, large organizations try to figure out how to serve the largest number of people. Mm-hmm. And I think fewer people are willing to say like, I actually only have access to 6, and those are the 6 I'm going to help right now. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's sort of like that, I'm forgetting her name and I wish I knew it right now, but she planted trees, in Africa. And it was like one of the greatest, movements ever when it came to planting trees. Gosh, I'm explaining this terribly, but it started with one access to what she had access to, one tree. So I would also, part of the encouragement for me mentally every day is just like, 6 people might not sound like a lot to some, especially if they're like, you're doing a disservice to the 200,000 people that you have access to. And at the end of the day, I'm like, how many do I really have access to if there's 6 in front of me that are starving? So, and not saying that they're all starving, but
right.
Potatoes. Okay. The pretty potatoes are an NFT project of exactly what it sounds like. Potatoes with eyelashes. And, the project started when there was a little bit of an NFT craze going on. And I just thought it was hilarious. People were posting out penguins and all the fun stuff. And I was like, I made a joke. I designed a potato and posted it to Twitter and was like, no one ever, me, LOL, I'm going to get so rich off this potato. And people asked where they could buy it. And it was a joke. But long story short, I can, you know, get to what ended up happening was I did spend hours creating a few more potatoes, and listed them on OpenSea, the project, all of the proceeds, 100% of them do go back to the students. So like I said, we raised about 4 to 5 Ethereum, and all of that goes directly back to the students. There will be a second project launching actually on the Solana network in October or so, but the first project sold out. Super, super grateful for all the support there. We've had some resales ever since, which is super fun. And you know, you've got from anything from Jeff Bezos potato to couch potato to a pretty potato. So those are on OpenSea under Pretty Potatoes. And you can follow them on Twitter on Pretty Potatoes 7, because Pretty Potatoes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 was taken.
Wow. Who would have thought? And I guess backing up on like education front here for NFTs real quickly, for those who aren't quite as familiar with it, maybe just a little bit of background on what they are, just for some context, because not everyone's on Twitter into the craze. Not everyone works in crypto at myself. Like what, you know, what are NFTs? What is OpenSea? I guess just kind of a Cliff Notes version of that. But just so people understand what you're doing, there's been a big mania around it. You know, you selling pretty potatoes may not make sense to everyone. So maybe a little added color there.
Yeah, it's what I go back to is that, you know, you have an era of physical art that will always make sense. And now you have a technological age that has produced some of the most epic digital art. And it comes down to the question of who actually owns it. For example, anything that I post could be easily replicated, or some of, if you are on Twitter, even if you're not in the crypto space, you know, you post memes and there's a really good chance that your meme will be ripped off a couple days from then. So how do you prove digital ownership, or sorry, ownership of digital items when they can, you know, be screenshotted and replicated and whatnot? And part of that, as a creator, realizing that, even the content that I'm creating, the videos that I'm creating, having ownership of those things is really mucky in the digital sense. So what an NFT does is it basically enables you as a creator of anything digital to post that on the blockchain, which the background on the blockchain is I'm trying to like basic down the blockchain without.
It's hard. I mean, it's basically just a ledger online accessible to anyone with internet that it, you know, just transactions that are posted there. It's so funny things that seem simple that you can explain, you blank on when the time comes. But I mean, it's essentially just listing transactions. It's immutable. It cannot be changed, so that any information or data that you put on the blockchain is pretty much imprinted forever. And it's not really something that you can just go back and erase, like something that might be within the traditional systems. And it really has a lot of different applications for, you know, transactions, even doing kind of like legal forms, that sort of thing. I mean, there are a lot of different ways, but I mean, it's also like in a more traditional sense and quote unquote, because that's more of a new thing. It's like you have these coins and tokens that operate on a blockchain, and you can even, it's a super data rich space. So you can follow where even an individual coin or token on the blockchain has moved to and from in addresses. Yes. And those are, I mean, they're not like, you know, Kayla Kilbride, you have your addresses online that they show instead of like your actual identity. So it's kind of kept more private, but for art, it's the same thing, right? So, I mean, you want to track a digital version of the Mona Lisa, there's only one of those, and you can track all the way back to when it was created and added onto the blockchain, where it's been and where it went. So that's a roundabout way to explain it, I guess, and probably not my best work if anyone from work is listening to this, but I tried.
That's so funny. No, I think that's great. Tracing ownership, publicly being able to trace and track ownership. So for creators, it's, I would argue, like life-changing. It will have some really neat effects down the line. I think there's some, you can look up like NFT creator space and it'll pop up with a ton of stuff and potential for the future. But that is tangenting, all to say you will be the sole owner of a non-fungible, just meaning one of a kind, basically token, a potato. So does that actually have any value? Absolutely not. Not unless you assign it value. Yeah. And I'm not even going to try to pretend like NFTs have value. I think the utility aspect is one thing that will bring utility, as in, does it have a use?
How do you determine value? Right. I mean, I'm very much on the camp of like, it doesn't even have to make sense. Right. It's just like what the value that anyone is willing to pay for it, what they'll assign to it. And it may not make sense, but right now this totally, I would say, there was a digital rock that went for a couple $1 million. So yeah, I mean, maybe it might be a bit of a mania to say the least. I could think of a few other things I'd do with that money, but that's just
Goodness. But I mean, people are trying to become very rich off of these things as well. So there's the aspect of, you know, what's the next big thing. That's why the fad exists. A lot of people are, you know, buying an NFT for $100 and selling it for $1,000. Some are buying it for $1,000, selling it for $1,000,000. Some buy it for $1,000,000 and can't freaking sell it. So, it's an interesting space. But going back to even the Mona Lisa example, like you can't walk into the Louvre or wherever the Mona Lisa is, snap a photo of it, print it out, put it in a frame and sell it for what the Mona Lisa is worth. Because it's not the real one. It's not the original. So the NFT space says this is, in fact, the original, and you are, in fact, the owner. And so, you know, like we said, does a potato have value beyond the fact that it is literally setting some of these kids up for financial success? Maybe not. But that's sort of the interesting aspect of, I think, the craze that's happening right now is it's providing opportunity for people to just think a little differently. And some people who would have never previously had opportunity or skill sets in certain areas to actually amass wealth and some lots of it, and others just in the space learning about it. So it's opportunity, it's new. Could it implode on itself? Maybe. Yeah, totally. I don't know. I'm not a crypto expert. I was actually having this conversation earlier today, literally, where I was like, I don't know every single thing about how my dollar works. Mm-hmm. And I still use it to transact. I don't care to know every little thing about crypto. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to use it. And some people would, like, I think crypto maxis or whatever might be upset about that, but maybe they might not be. They might be like, that's exactly what we're hoping for. You don't need to know everything, but using it over time is where it becomes of value, when it's usable by a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a super dynamic space. And I was just having this conversation with someone yesterday, but it's like, is anyone really an expert in crypto yet? And I say that working in crypto, the space is changing so quickly. Right. And we just have to kind of adapt and try to keep up, honestly. But I do want to kind of wrap things up here. But on the NFT front, just to wrap that up, I think it's very interesting, right? Like, even if a lot of people don't see value in it, right? Like, lives are being changed and kind of forward-looking fortunes have been made. And I really do hope that, you know, obviously, as we both feel from like a financial literacy and kind of planning standpoint throughout your life, that those people have the resources that they need to manage that wealth and to not, you know, you see so many cases of people, even celebrities or athletes, making these giant sums of money and then blowing it all away. So I hope that, you know, next step in that progression is, you know, figuring out what to do with it in a way that's responsible, that preserves it, that grows it for the future. So off of that soapbox, always love that. Work to do there, but I do want to get to our general question that I always ask at the end of this, but, you know, what do you do to decompress? What does Kayla do outside of, you know, everything that you talked about today for fun?
I usually get outside.
Sold. I knew I liked her. Not an ad.
I do a little bit of rock climbing now again. I did it before the pandemic and then gyms shut down, indoor rock climbing gyms. I don't really do it outdoors much, but do some of that. I also just take unreasonably hot showers. I go on walks. I live a couple blocks from the beach. So I usually walk down to the beach and just like literally one of my favorite things to do is physically like get entangled in nature. So whether that just be like holding sand or diving into the ocean, But yeah, going out, letting the sun just touch my skin, things like that, where it's for sure, like, I'm not kidding when I say get outside. So being a little active, engaging with nature and taking unreasonably hot showers.
I'm with you on both of those things. Love that. And always a big proponent of the big, get outside movement that may or may not have been, pushed along by me, but not the first to do it. Not the last. Anyways, Kayla, thank you so much again for being on the pod. So glad to know you. Love all that you're doing and happy that we could highlight that today. But yeah, where can everyone find you on social media before I forget?
At Kayla Kilbred on Twitter, one L, don't do two. I will die if you do two L's in my last
bride.
yeah, K-I-L bride. And then on TikTok at Girls Talk Stocks. It looks like Girl Stocks Talks, which is a terrible, terrible way to post my TikTok name. And then Instagram also at K Kilbred. So
awesome.
Oh, wait a second. I'm so sorry. I've misled people. Is it actually Kayla Kilbred? I think it's Kay Kilbred, K-A-Y. Whoops.
She was trying to steer you away from her account, everyone, but
yeah,
have no
don't
fear.
Follow me. Yeah, it is K-A-Y Kilbred, one L. Don't kill me. Thank you.
There we go. Perfect. Well, Kayla, thank you again. And thank you to everyone for listening to this episode. We will be back with a new episode shortly.
Bye.